There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcasts at DubaiEye1038.com.
Evening on Drive Live. Let's welcome Simon Marks to the program and also, I suppose, to 2018. Welcome, Simon.
Absolutely. Happy New Year to all of you. How are you?
Very happy New Year to you. Very well, thank you. Back from the cold of Scotland. How was your Hogmanay spent?
It was a bit of a staycation, but very pleasant. Very nice. Very cold here, though. It's been very, very cold. Hopefully warmer climes lie around the corner. Well, I know they do for me, because I'm off to South Africa next weekend, but hopefully warmer climes lie around the corner for the rest of Washington as well.
Well, you know, the offer is open for you to have a little stay over here in Dubai at some point. So
thank you very much. I will take you up on it.
Yeah, well, I can't take it back now, can I? Because I just made it public.
That's public.
Simon, let's start with the real stable genius news. A very, very bizarre weekend. Can you run us through this in a reasonable, I suppose, chronological order?
Yes, I mean, and not just a bizarre weekend, actually, thinking about it, but a totally bizarre week. I think by the end of the first week, those of us who cover events here were once again feeling absolutely exhausted from this constant chaos that emanates from Donald Trump's White House, which, of course, began at the beginning of the week with Donald Trump asserting that he had a larger nuclear button than Kim Jong-un. And we all thought we would spend some time discussing the respective size of the U.S. and North Korean nuclear buttons. But then, of course, came news of this Michael Wolff book, Fire and Fury, its publication date being moved up by the writer and his publisher because we all learnt that Stephen Bannon, Donald Trump's former right-hand man, had told Michael Wolff that he believed that the meeting at Trump Tower between Donald Trump Jr., the president's son, and emissaries from Russia was treasonous and unpatriotic and should never have occurred, and Donald Trump Jr. should have called the FBI. So suddenly there was a completely new story in town. The book, as you know, also quotes large numbers of people within Donald Trump's inner circle, each one of whom has told Michael Wolff what they've told many people here in Washington quietly over the last few months, namely that they think, as Secretary of State Rex Tillerson has never denied saying, they think that Donald Trump is a moron. They think he's not up to the job. They think he's an idiot, and in some cases they think he is worse than that. And that, of course, started raising this question about the president's mental acuity, which then led to that absolutely remarkable tweet from Camp David first thing in the morning on Saturday, in which the president defended his record and described himself as a very stable genius. You know, what do you do with that, especially when we're dealing with a president of the United States who says that, you know, the rest of the world doesn't focus enough on his accomplishments, and yet here is a president of the United States stoking the fire over whether, in fact, he is up to the job. Does he have the mental capacity for the job? Is he suffering from some kind of mental acuity issue? And should it at some point be tested? The only thing that Donald Trump did last week, well, two things. First of all, he sold loads of copies of Michael Wolff's book. You can't find them anywhere in the United States now while the publishers order up a reprint. And the second thing he did was fuel the fire about whether he is bright enough to be president of the United States.
Now, Simon, you mentioned Steve Bannon. He has made a dramatic come down, I guess. He's apologised for his role in this book. Why did it take him so long, if that's what he really thinks, to make this statement of regret?
I think that is absolutely the key question. I mean, Stephen Bannon, the statement of regret was, as the Americans would say, days late and several dollars short. I mean, the statement of regret, by the way, makes no sense at all. Bannon says that he didn't mean to suggest that Donald Trump Jr., the president's son, was guilty of treason when he met those Russian emissaries. He actually meant to say that it was Paul Manafort, the president's campaign director, who had acted in a treasonous and unpatriotic way by organizing that meeting with Russian emissaries. Now, look, I mean, a meeting is either treasonous and unpatriotic or it's not. And if the meeting is treasonous and unpatriotic, presumably all of the men and women in that room are engaged in an act of treasonous behavior. So it's hard to say, oh, no, I meant Paul Manafort, not Donald Trump Jr., because if Paul Manafort was acting in a treacherous way, well, so was Donald Trump Jr. I mean, Stephen Bannon has seen his world collapse over the last week. He's seen an act of betrayal, as the White House views it, that has led the President of the United States completely to ditch him, that has led his funders, the wealthy and influential right-wing Mercer family, to announce that they're pulling the plug on him, and the White House calling on Breitbart News to consider whether he should remain at that organization. So Stephen Bannon really, I think, in many ways, didn't have much of a choice but to offer a statement of regret. The question is, can he build his way back in any way? And that's hard to see, although we do know that the President of the United States was speaking to Bannon as recently as the middle of December. So even though Stephen Bannon left the White House in August, he clearly had remained in touch with Donald Trump until this absolutely astonishing act of political betrayal.
It's a real struggle to get to grips with this, Simon. I have to come clean and say I'm wondering what's actually really behind this. Is this classic misdirection or is this classic just mismanagement? I'm not sure. Stephen Bannon, executive editor of Breitbart News, supporters, right-wing supporters of the president, along with Fox and a number of other right-wing organizations. Just how much of an effect does this have, first of all, on the credibility of Donald Trump, the President of the United States, but also, I suppose, on the credibility of some of these media organizations? I'm really struggling.
Well, you know, it's interesting. I took a look at Breitbart News last night, and if you look at the comments section after the article covering Stephen Bannon's statement of regret, there are a large number of commenters on that Breitbart News page that continue to support Stephen Bannon and are willing to give him the benefit of the doubt. They're not in any sense pulling their support away from President Trump. But I think there is a challenge here, because that no one is more Trumpian, other than President Trump, than Steve Bannon, and in many ways he was the brains behind the operation ideologically. And outside the White House and completely on the outs with the President of the United States, you know, how does Trumpian ideology advance if the brains of the operation is cut off completely from it? There is another big issue here as well, though, which is that President Trump has been forcing his inner circle, or perhaps that's an unfair characterization, encouraging his inner circle to go on television and pledge loyalty to him rather than to Stephen Bannon. And you may have seen this much discussed television dust-up yesterday between Stephen Miller, absolutely an acolyte of Stephen Bannon, and Jake Tapper, Stephen Miller, this young advisor to the president, in which Stephen Miller absolutely sold Stephen Bannon down the river, but also was unable to answer a very simple question that was posed to him by Jake Tapper, which is, did the President of the United States, did Donald Trump, meet the Russian emissaries when they were in Trump Tower? Bannon says he is certain that a meeting took place. There is no answer forthcoming from the White House and those people around Donald Trump now as to whether Donald Trump met those Russians inside Trump Tower. And if he did, that's new grist for Robert Mueller, the special prosecutor's mill. And so, you know, all of these things are tied together, and still, these are very treacherous days for the Trump administration.
And Simon, I guess we go from one dramatic occasion to another. The Golden Globes were overnight for us, really. And the big story, or the biggest story, was rather Oprah Winfrey. Not just Oprah Winfrey, but lots of people on a platform talking about change. And Oprah Winfrey, of course, 9-minute speech that has been seen around the world today.
I have to confess, Natalie, they were overnight for me as well, because I decided to get an early night last night and then woke up to all of these headlines about Oprah's speech, which I have now watched. And, of course, Washington being Washington, various political analysts here are all saying on Twitter, she's running for the presidency. That may be wishful thinking on their part, or maybe she is. Let's see. I mean, look, that was Oprah Winfrey taking the moral helm at the Golden Globes in the aftermath of the Harvey Weinstein scandal and all the fallout from the Harvey Weinstein issue, which is being felt not just across the United States but around the world, and not just in the showbiz industry but in a whole variety of different industries, including, of course, the news media. But an absolutely impassioned speech by Oprah Winfrey to say this kind of treatment of women ends now. The page is turning. There is a new chapter that is opening. And, you know, they were all on their feet there in Hollywood for her, of course. And look, what's interesting politically about that is the Democrats, the opposition in the U.S., doesn't really have a spokesperson. It doesn't really have a figurehead. I mean, that's partly because there's no official leader of the opposition here, like there is in parliamentary democracies. But, you know, for a figure like Oprah Winfrey to appear on television articulating those thoughts is pretty dramatic. And I think that's one of the reasons why so many people are saying, wow, I wonder if she is thinking about some kind of political run. Imagine 2020, Winfrey versus Trump. Could there be a more engaging, if not more substantive, political event than that?
Right, be the greatest made-for-TV movie of all time.
Absolutely, yeah. She could play herself.
Simon Marks, Washington, D.C. Good to talk to you. Thank you, Simon.
Cheers, guys.
There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcasts at DubaiEye1038.com.